Hey everybody, welcome to the 30th episode of Across the Table, and my name is Matt Mendoza. This is my interview with grinder Josh McLean. He has been on quite the heater lately, in that he got second at GP Miami, losing to Reed Duke. And then he went to Detroit to avenge himself and beat Reed Duke for the first place spot. As well, he pretty much waltzed all the way to the championship of the TCG Player 50K. That was 2 weeks ago, or 3 weeks ago. This is one of my less accessible interviews, in that we talk a lot more about Magic than I usually do, but I think it's pretty good. Anyway, thank you very much for listening, and enjoy the show.
It's on hosted on Mana Deprived, right?
Correct. Which is why I was so excited when I saw you in Vegas. Or no, in Kansas City.
Gen Con.
It was Gen Con. With the Mana Deprived hoodie.
Oh, yeah.
Because I don't see those in the wild very often.
Yeah. Usually at GPs when there's when they're closer to Canada, you'll get a few. But
Yeah. So what is your connection to Mana Deprived?
I work with Alex Hain and John Stern for the Pro Tours.
Okay.
So that group of guys. Although now we just changed this past Pro Tour. We're team face-to-face now. But we're still, loosely connected with Mana Deprived.
Yeah. Well, how did you get into that group? Because let me introduce you real quick. This is Josh McLean. He's on a heater right now. To be frank, he's a really cool guy from Iowa. Which city in Iowa do you currently live in?
Iowa City.
Okay, and you go to the University of Iowa, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And what are you studying?
My major right now is computer science.
Okay. Now, before we go into that, let's continue with your Mana Deprived connection and your Canadian connection, because Alexander Hain lives in Canada.
Yeah.
And you don't live in Canada. You actually live pretty far away from Canada.
Yep.
So how did that connection start?
Well, I originally worked with a group called Team Panic for Pro Tour, Barcelona and Seattle, and it was run by Matthias Hunt.
Okay.
And then after I wasn't queued for Montreal, but Montreal was the last Pro Tour that team worked together. So going forward, Matthias was looking for a new team. And I guess he had contacted the Mana Deprived group and had worked out working with them. And then I had gotten a sponsorship exemption for that Pro Tour. It was Pro Tour San Diego. And then I guess they needed a few more people. So then Matthias asked me if I'd be interested in working with them. And if I was, he could talk to them. So then he talked to Alex and they needed another person. So I ended up working with them for that Pro Tour. And it was really great. They're all awesome guys. We got along really well. So, and then I've been working with them since.
Okay. Now, sponsorship invitation. I did not know that you got one of those.
Yep, I actually got one the last time they did them.
How did you get that one, and how do you feel about them ultimately?
I always thought they were interesting. I may be a little biased now that I got one, but even before I got one, I thought they were kind of sweet, just because, it gave you that opportunity if you did have a bunch of near misses to still get there. It was a little different for me because the original reason they gave for giving them out was because people who missed would probably get an invitation on rating anyways. And I know I definitely wouldn't have gotten an invitation on rating because I did really well. And Magic Online was one of the big reasons I got the sponsorship invite, and that doesn't give you any rating. So it actually ended up working out really well for me. But
okay.
So I had I lost in the finals of a PTQ on Moto, and then I lost in the finals of a PTQ in real life. Along with another top eight on Moto that I lost in the quarterfinals or whatever. So they actually, at first when they announced the sponsorship invites, they didn't connect my Moto name to me in real life. So I didn't get one at first. And it was really weird because a couple people who had just two finals and not a third top eight got a sponsorship invite, which was really weird. So, luckily I asked about it and asked, because they said it was just based on results. so I asked why I didn't get one, and they looked into it and realized they forgot to connect my moto name, so they ended up giving me one after they announced them. So it was pretty sweet.
Yeah, well, that is ultimately a problem with the lack of connection between moto and paper magic.
Yeah, yeah, I'm glad it anyway. But I'm glad it was just a just an overlook rather than something else. But
yeah.
So yeah, so sponsored invites were pretty sweet.
And then how do you feel about it? I mean, going back, do you think you should have been rewarded one anyway?
I mean, in the sense that, what they described the sponsorship exemption as, for people who had a bunch of near misses, I think I definitely fit that description. I had, two finals losses, which is obviously very one match away,
Yeah.
But as far as, going back further than that, before they had sponsorship invites, I certainly would not have, gotten an invite. Once again, had it been based on rating, I probably would have gotten an invite. So, I don't know if I necessarily say I deserved an invite, but I think for the parameters that they set for the sponsorship exemptions, I definitely earned one.
I mean, do you agree with them, fundamentally?
Yeah, like I said, I really liked it when they first announced it. I think if you do get really close a few times, that you should. I think I more really liked it because of when they initially implemented it. It was meant for people who had top eighted a couple GPs and hadn't been invited, which I definitely think they need it for that. If you top eight two Grand Prix in one season and aren't invited to the Pro Tour, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it takes consistency to top eight more than one.
Yeah, yeah. It's definitely a little harder to justify for just PDQs because people have been losing in the finals of PDQs for years, and not getting invites.
Yeah. I just wonder where my invite is.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know if maybe they could have done it just for GPs, but then that's a little, I don't know how they'd work that out, but
yeah, I mean, thinking of coming up with a solution that fixes the problem of not being able to be invited based on rating.
Yeah, yeah. If you top eight two Grand Prix in a span of a month or two, you're probably going to be queued on rating, in the old system. So
yeah. Now, before we go deeper into that topic, Josh, where are you from originally?
I'm from Des Moines, Iowa. I grew up in Johnston, actually, but it's a suburb of Des Moines. So I went to high school there and then moved out here as soon as I graduated high school.
And what was your childhood like?
Well, it wasn't bad. I played a lot of Magic. I've been playing since I was 12 or something. We had a local card shop. It was great. I'd go there every Friday for F&M. Had a great group of, great group of players to hang out with. And they really got me started, playing competitively. So it was pretty great.
And how did you start? You mentioned you came to the game at approximately the same age I did.
Oh yeah, me and my group of friends that I had back then, we first started playing Pokemon. We played that for a couple of years, probably about a year, and then we played Yu-Gi-Oh for about a year, and then Magic was just the next thing to move on to. We moved on to Magic, and then never moved on after that. So.
No, what got you started with card games in the first place?
So I started first with Pokemon, and I originally started playing the Game Boy game. I played video games a lot back then.
Okay.
So just another video game that had come out, and a bunch of friends had said it was pretty awesome. So I started playing the Pokemon video game, and then really liked that. And I was really into Pokemon back then. So, and then there was suddenly another friend told me about this card game they had that was just also based on Pokemon. So I thought it sounded pretty sweet, so I started playing that, and I absolutely love that. I love that more than the video game. So then I've been playing cards ever since.
Now, why did you prefer the card game to the video game?
I really liked, and still to this day, I really like the interaction you have between just other people. I also like the strategy behind it. As a kid, I probably didn't look that deep into it, as far as the strategy and everything, but I definitely liked, there'd be tournaments every Saturday, or not every Saturday, every third Saturday of the month. I remember at the local card shop for Pokemon, and I just loved that the entire day of just getting together with a bunch of people that you didn't necessarily know, but you all loved to play this game. So I just really liked that part, even as a kid, just the community and everything.
And you're not jaded yet by 4,500 player GPs?
4,500 is a bit much. I actually skipped Vegas because I thought it was going to be pretty crazy. I really wanted to go, but I decided to go to a PDQ instead. But I think the PTQ was standard too, and I don't play limited all that much. I usually actually like only play limited when the Pro Tour comes around. Like I usually skip the sealed season, so it's actually really nice to get an invite through a GP because I don't have to play sealed this
year.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
That makes sense.
So I skipped that GP, but you know, I'm glad they did the thing where all X2s get invites. That's you know, that helps. It still obviously sucks to X2 GP and not top 8, but at least it sucks a little less now.
Yeah. So Pokemon, you started. Started with CCGs, and you started with the Pokemon CCG, and then when did you turn to Magic? And I mean, were you competitive when you played Pokemon?
I mean, as competitive as you can be as a 10-year-old, but there's tournaments, like big, not big tournaments, but you know, for me at the time, there were big tournaments every third Saturday of the month. So I'd like, you know, I always try to have like the best cards or whatever. You know, obviously I couldn't like afford, you know, the high end stuff, but I'd always, you know, as far as like my play group, I'd always try to get, you know, my deck as good as I could get with the cards we had. But I wasn't like, you know, on the internet looking at deck lists and stuff. No.
Oh, okay.
I don't even think I like had the internet back then.
And then you
I definitely love the competition.
Okay.
So like I played a lot with my friends casually too. So I like both sides, I guess, back then. Like nowadays I don't play too much casual Magic, which I kind of miss that, but I just, you know, I'm too busy and I play so many tournaments that I don't know, like I play so much that I'm not necessarily burnt out, but you know, I don't know, like I'd rather if the options are like play a game of EDH or like, you know, play standard because I have a tournament in 2 weeks, I'm going to always choose play standard.
Yeah. Yeah. I
kind of miss that, but at the same time, you know, I do love the competition. So
yeah, totally understand. I remember when casual playing for me was playtesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So, and then, so your parents, do they support your, Pokemon Yu-Gi-Oh! Magic sort of playing, or
they supported my like Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh. You know, I was just a kid and it was something to do, but once I, you know, got into high school and like the later years of high school and, you know, throughout college, they didn't really like it too much because, you know, I played a lot. I, you know, if I'm traveling to tournaments every weekend, that takes a lot of time out of school. I don't think it affects my school that much, but they definitely don't like it too much.
how did they, in high school, they have to give you permission to start going to tournaments and stuff, like.
Yeah, yeah. No, I didn't really start PTQing until my senior year of high school, so I was really only going to, like, you know, Friday Night Magic and stuff, so it wasn't that bad during high school, but it was, like I said, like, my senior year of high school, I started to go to some PTQs, and I would really only go to maybe, like, one or two a season. There'd be, like, a local one, and then, like, one, you know, like, in Nebraska or something that was like 2 hours away, so I didn't PTQ all that much in high school.
Okay, I mean, what was their objection to it? I mean, did they think that it was sort of a childish thing that you should eventually grow out of, or were they worried that it would be just a distraction from your scholastic endeavors? Or
yeah, mainly that it'd be a distraction. There's probably also a little bit of the, you know, to them, it just seems like this card. I mean, I started playing when I was 12, so like to them, yeah, it seems like, you know, just this children's card game. But obviously, it's much more than that. So I think, like I said, the main thing though is definitely just the distracting from schoolwork.
Okay. And were they nerds themselves?
Not really. No. Like my mom grew up on a farm, so she never really, as far as I know, you know, didn't really do that. So my dad was in the army, so he wasn't okay. Too. You know, he grew up watching like baseball and football and stuff. So. Maybe, I don't know, my dad maybe a little bit, but not nearly as much as me.
I mean, were they ever really pushing you into sports?
No, that's one thing I am, you know, kind of grateful of. They never really pushed that far for, like, that type of stuff. You know, I played, like, you know, they let, if I wanted to, like, I played, you know, a little bit of like, football and basketball, you know, my, like, I think it was, like, middle school or early high school, maybe, you know, and I played, like, baseball throughout my, you know, like, kindergarten through whenever, so I... But they didn't, like, you know, force me to, so.
Okay. No, and then you mentioned that you transitioned into Magic. What was it about Magic that really caught you? That, because, I mean, you could still be playing Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, that's a reasonable conclusion.
Yeah. Like I said, at first, you know, just some friends had it, and it was a new thing to try, so I started playing it, and then I'm not really sure why I necessarily started playing it over Yu-Gi-Oh! It's just something that, you know, a bunch of my friends started playing this instead, so then suddenly, whenever we'd go over to everybody's house, we'd be playing Magic instead of Yu-Gi-Oh! Just because that's what, you know, that was the new thing, that's what people wanted to play, but, and then I just kind of got hooked. Like I said, I'm not really sure exactly what it was, but, I stopped really enjoying a lot of the things they were doing in Yu-Gi-Oh! Like, I know a lot of people got upset about this, and I wasn't really upset, but I just, like, was kind of disappointed. But I know they printed all the, like, really rare cards in just, like, a starter deck, so that kind of turned me off of Yu-Gi-Oh! Because I, like, had, you know, spent, like, $100 on a Mirror Force or whatever, or Regeki, I don't remember which one it was, and then they just printed it in a starter deck at, like, Common. So, like, that was, like, really disheartening, and, like, now I had all these cards that were just worthless. I mean, they were worthless, but, they're, like, I don't know. So, like, back then, you know, I didn't have much money, so, you know,
yeah.
14 or whatever, 12, I don't, you know, so, like, getting these cards was, like, a really big accomplishment, you know, so that just, like, was really disappointing, and then just, like I said, you know, we started playing Magic, and I think Magic's just, like, a better game, so it was a lot funner. I enjoyed it a lot more.
Agree. Yeah, that's so, one thing I've heard about being in the industry myself. That's one thing I've heard about Yu-Gi-Oh! Is that it's just really volatile.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I haven't paid any attention to it in the past 10 years, but yeah, I know a lot of, they did that to a lot of cards. They were like these like rare foil, you know, really hard to get cards that like you needed for your decks, and they were like I said, I think a Mirror Force was like $100, and then they printed it at Common in a starter deck. So that's like a pretty good, you know, if they suddenly printed Tarmogoyf at Common in Modern Masters, that would have just like destroyed the price, obviously.
Yeah. You know? And then so you transition into Magic, and then you transitioned into competitive Magic.
Yep.
What was that like? I mean, what did competitive Magic bring to you that playing with your friends around the kitchen table didn't?
Definitely the, like, you know, the sense of accomplishment you get from winning. You know, I had some friends who played really competitively, like played on the Pro Tour and stuff when I was at, like, I'd say like the middle of my high school years. Anyways, transitioning from casual Magic to competitive Magic. Yeah, like I said, I had some, you know, when I was playing FNM and stuff, I had a couple friends who would travel around to Grand Prix and had done pretty well on, like, the PTQ circuit and had done, like, okay. Like, I had a friend who finished, like, 11th on a Pro Tour once, another guy who, like, top 32. So, like, they were having, you know, some mild success, and just, like, hearing about that was, like, pretty sweet, and they'd come back and talk about these tournaments. So, you know, I'd read about them in coverage or whatever. And that was pretty awesome. So that got me interested. Then I started looking into PTQs and, like, started reading Grand Prix coverage and whatnot. Eventually, I went to a PTQ and, you know, it was great. I really enjoyed it. And just, like, the sense of competition and, like, the sense of accomplishment if you, like, do well. Like, my very first PTQ, I, like, it was actually an unintentionally drew in the last round to get 9th place. And, you know, it's just like that drive to actually top 8, you know?
Yeah.
So I had that going. And then I loved it, and so I wanted to do better. I wanted to win a PTQ, so, you know, I started practicing a lot more, and I started taking it a lot more seriously. So
okay, now at this point, you start transitioning into this kind of dual life, this dual, like, normal student life,
yeah,
and Magic grinder life, which are sometimes at odds. Were you ever worried about those two worlds being in conflict?
You know, not necessarily. I guess I didn't quite view it as, you know, these, like, two super different things at the time. It was just, like, you know, like, school was just something that was always there. So I was just, like, going to school and then, like, you know, just playing a game on the side, you know. I'd always, you know, I played, like, computer games a lot in my early years of high school. So, you know, I just kind of looked at this, had kind of taken over that time. So.
Okay. Makes sense. Now, and then you transition from high school. What was high school like for you? I mean, were you made fun of? Were you a nerd, or were you? I mean, obviously you're a nerd. I'm a nerd.
Yeah. No, it wasn't too bad. You know, it was a pretty big high school, so there was you know, there were people that did everything. So, you know, I had a group of friends that we all, like, played Magic. So we were definitely, like, you know, the more nerdy kids in school. But you know, it wasn't too bad. You know, I had a lot of people I got along with.
Cool. That's good.
Yeah, you know, it wasn't the stereotypical, you know, jocks beating up the nerds or whatever. So it wasn't too bad.
Yeah. And then you decide to go to college, and you went to the University of Iowa. And what are you studying?
I started off studying physics. I did that for 2 years. And then I actually took about 2 years off and then came back last year studying computer science. And so now I'm still studying that right now.
Okay. I'm sure your parents were really excited about your 2 year break.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't just decide to stop going 1 year. I took some classes at a community college, and because I wasn't doing too great in my classes that I had taken, so I took some classes at a community college and then didn't really like those, so then just kind of didn't sign up for classes the next semester, and then got a job. I worked at a gas station for a year, full time. I'm not full time, maybe 30 hours a week or whatever, so I just kind of did that, and then eventually it was maybe a year and a half, 2 years, I can't remember exactly, but and then took some classes again. So
okay, and why physics?
I really liked it in high school. I took an AP physics class that I really enjoyed. I was kind of like a lot of people coming out of high school. I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do, so that was just something that I liked. So I figured I'd try it out, and I liked it. I'm actually considering switching back now, but I don't know. That's something I got to think about some more. But I really enjoy it. I really enjoy it. Just figuring out how everything works. Kind of like in magic. Kind of figuring out why I'm making these plays or whatever, trying to figure out why, when this happens, when you throw something in the air, why it comes back down or whatever. Just figuring all that stuff out was pretty interesting to me.
Okay, when you switched to computer science, what did you want to get out of that?
I mainly switched to computer science because I think that it'd be way easier just to finish my degree, graduate, and get a job. Physics would take a lot of work, and even after I graduated, I'd probably have to do more schooling. So, like I said, I just taken a break for 2 years, so I kind of wanted to just get something done and get a degree and be done with it. So now I'm considering switching back and going more for the long haul, but we'll see.
Okay.
I do like computer science. I enjoy it. It's not something that I'm just just got to get a job, and even if I hate it or whatever. I do enjoy it, but we'll see.
Cool. And then magic in the whole time frame.
Yeah.
I'm assuming when you got competitive out of in the last part of your high school career, and then you've been competitive the whole time, right?
Yeah, less so at some points. I know I took a break for about 6 months to a year. When was it? When Scars came out? I didn't really play much when Scars came out.
Okay.
But I think maybe for, like I said, probably about 8 months I didn't play. Otherwise, yeah, it's been mostly, I've been going to PTQs. I didn't win a PTQ until, I think it was 2010 or 2011. I played for 3 or 4 years, going to PTQs, 2 out of the 4 weeks of a month. And I had a lot of top eights, but didn't really have, never really got that, invite until 2011 or so. So it's definitely a grind, as they say.
Yeah, yeah.
But
when you quit?
Scars. So it would have been actually before that. I quit for 8 months and then started playing again, and when was it? It would have been Zendikar that I, so maybe I won a PTQ. I can't remember. I can't remember if it was before or after I quit. For some reason, I think it was right as I started up again, but
okay.
I'm not sure exactly. Let's see. It would have been. It was extended, and I played the Blue White Stoneforge Mystic deck. What did it had just come out? The sword of Feast Enchantment had just come out. So I guess it was Besiege, Mirrodin Besiege.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah, it was right as I started playing, because I started playing again at the Mirrodin Besiege pre-release. It was my first time I went to a big tournament again. So and then, a month later, I'd won a PTQ. So I was pretty lucky.
I'm sure that was one of those feelings that you were I still got it.
Yeah. So it was pretty awesome.
Now, why did you quit ultimately?
I quit more to, I don't know. I moved into an apartment with some friends, and it was sealed season, and I don't really like sealed. So I thought I didn't necessarily quit. I knew I wasn't quitting. I was taking a break. I'd just been burnt out a while, because I'd been playing for so long, and hadn't won a PTQ yet. So I just kind of disheartened. So I just was okay, I'm just going to take a break for about a year. And then I'd always planned on eventually playing again.
Okay.
So yeah, I guess quit's a bad word.
I don't know anybody who.
Yeah, nobody who really quits ever quits. Magic. But yeah, so even like I said, you know, a lot of people say they're quitting and then play again. I was never planning on actually quitting. I was, you know, just planning on taking a little bit of a break.
Okay. And why did you feel like you needed to take the break?
I was just kind of burnt out. You know, I had, like I said, I played for, you know, like PDQ'd pretty heavily for like a good two and a half years at that point, without actually winning. So, you know, it was a little draining, you know, going every weekend and constantly falling short. So I just, like I said, it was something I still really liked it, and I still knew that I wanted to continue doing it, but I just needed a little bit of a break.
Okay. And when you fell short time after time and then you kind of stepped away, like, was that frustrating? I mean, was that...
It was definitely frustrating at the time, you know, like losing in another PTQ top four or whatever. I actually never even made the finals. I had like I think seven or so top eights. You know, just like at the time, like when you lose, it was pretty frustrating. But looking back, it wasn't too bad. Like, you know, it felt like, you know, it's like, geez, seven top eights, I still haven't won, seemed like a lot. But, you know, I have friends nowadays who have more than that, and you know, I feel kind of bad for them because I know they're good enough to win a PTQ, but you know, they just haven't started having a line for them quite yet. But
yeah,
to look back, it actually wasn't too bad, but it felt really frustrating and disheartening at the time.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious as to why you chose to step away from the game as opposed to put more into it, just with all those near misses.
Yeah. I mean, I had already, I was already putting a lot of effort into it. You know, I played Moto a lot. I played Moto a lot back then. You know, I was PDQing almost every weekend. So, like, I felt like I was putting about as much effort into it as I could. Just, like I definitely could have put, I don't know, like, better effort into it, if that makes sense. Like, I maybe could have, like, instead of just playing a bunch of Moto, I could have really, like, focused on what was going wrong and stuff. But at the time, you know, I felt like I was playing a lot, so I couldn't really, like, play more. I definitely could have played better, I guess.
Okay.
That makes sense. Like, I could have looked specifically, like, where to improve, what was going wrong and stuff, rather than just, like, well, you know, I lost in the top four again. I got to, you know, figure out what needs change for next week. Yeah, so that was the war I was doing back then, but...
Okay. No, then you come back, and then you win a PTQ.
Yeah. It was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Well, can you talk more, a little bit more about that?
Yeah, so the format had just changed. It was extended, but they had just changed it, and it was, I don't know if you remember, but it used to be like 7 blocks or something, or I don't know, 7 years, maybe, I don't remember what it was, but it used to be like Onslaught Forward or something, and they changed it, so now it was only four blocks.
Oh, the big extended rotation?
Yeah, so they changed it to like small extended. So it was only like Lorwyn Forward, which was a pretty small set of cards compared to the old extended.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I was really excited about that because I really like fairies. I played a lot of Lorwyn Block Constructed, so I played a lot of fairies back then. So I was really excited to play that deck, and I started off playing fairies, and I top eighted the very first extended PTQ I went to with fairies, and, you know, I ended up losing in the quarterfinals, but I thought it was like the first PTQ of the season, so I was like, okay, well, you know, if I can just play this deck all season, I'm, you know, hopefully things will go well because I really like this deck. I think I'm good at playing it. But then I'd done okay. I missed top eight in like the next PTQ with it. And then I'd seen this blue white deck online on Moto. Michael Hedrick and Ricky Sitter actually played in the finals of a Moto PTQ with the same list, Shibbet Hala and Sibbet Hala. Or I think they played in the quarterfinals or semifinals. But anyway, so it's this blue white, like the first iteration of like Callblade, basically.
Okay.
Stoneforge Mystic, Sword of Feast and Famines, and it looked really sweet. So I tried it, and I just tried it on Moto, and I really liked it. And then I top 8ed the PTQ that weekend, top 8ed the PTQ the next weekend, and still didn't win. And then I won the next PTQ after that. So it was a pretty crazy string of events there. And I had a friend who was playing the deck too, who top 8ed like 4 PTQs in a row with it too. The deck was just insane. I mean, he was playing Callblade before everybody else was playing Callblade. So the deck was just so good, and it felt great to finally win. You know, after I'd been trying to get on the Pro Tour for so long.
Yeah, so, were you ever worried that you just weren't good enough?
Oh, definitely. You know, I definitely had that feeling a lot. You know, especially I remember after losing in the quarterfinals of the PTQ before I won, I just thought, I was like, you know, that was like 3 PTQs that season that I top eighted and still hadn't won. I was just like, you know, I'm probably, something's clearly going wrong. It's possible, you know, I'm just not, you know, I'm good enough to top eight the tournaments, but I'm just not good enough to win. That was definitely a thought that was Yeah, I remember, like, immediately after I lost, I thought, like, that's all I could think about for the next, like, week. But luckily, I didn't have too much time to think about it, because then the next week I won a PTQ.
Yeah.
So. But, no, definitely.
And when so you've won your first PTQ, and what do your parents think of that?
I actually didn't think they would, like, I don't know, I just couldn't imagine how they would react to that when I told them. Well, because, you know, they didn't really like me driving to, like, you know, Chicago to play PTQs, like, driving 3.5 hours, you know, they'd always, like, be really worried that, you know, I was going to crash or something, or they just, like, didn't really like it that much. So I did not think they were going to take it well when I said I was, you know, flying to Japan to play in a pro tour. But they actually were really, you know, at that level, once they, you know, then I think that's when they kind of maybe realized that it was more of just this, like, you know, children's game that I was playing. But they actually took it really, really well, and they were, you know, pretty happy for me that I'd finally won. So that helped a lot.
Cool. So they were proud. They weren't, like, thinking that you were still continuing to while away the hours.
For sure.
Well, that's good.
You know, like I said, it was nice to finally have, you know, that culminating effort after, you know, all these years of, I guess not year, like, you know, 3 years or whatever of, like, trying to win a PTQ, like, finally doing it and getting to fly to Japan to play Magic was just, it was just awesome.
So that was when?
That would have been, well, it was Pro Tour Nagoya, so New Phyrexia, it was like Pro Tour New Phyrexia before they named them by set, so I'm not sure what year, I think it was 2011, like in May, yeah, like May 2011, I think.
Okay, so you fly to your first Pro Tour in Japan.
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was pretty awesome. You know, it was the first time I'd ever been outside of the U.S. So I had to get a passport and everything. But it was a crazy, you know, unique experience. And going to Japan was especially weird because, like, the part of Japan that we went to, not many people actually spoke English. Like, I'm sure I hear, like, if you go to other places in Japan, or, you know, I've been to Spain. And when I was in Spain and Dublin, obviously Dublin, people speak English. But, you know, even in Spain, like, most of the people spoke English. Whereas in Japan, in Nagoya at least, like, the people at the airport and the people at the hotel spoke English, but almost nobody else did. So it was like the surreal feeling, you know, like not being able to communicate with anybody. It's just weird. But it was, you know, it was awesome being there and just playing Magic.
So not many people spoke English. And you mentioned the surreal sort of, you mentioned that it was kind of surreal.
Yeah, it's just really weird. I mean, I guess I know how it feels, you know, for all the, see, like, a foreigner here in the U.S., how, like, weird it must be for them, you know, just not being able to communicate with anybody. It's just, you know, something that I never experienced before. You know, it was just really weird. Like I said, thankfully, I was there with a friend. You know, it was before I really, like, had a team or anything. It was just me and another guy who had won a PTQ for the first time. And we flew out, like, you know, Thursday, and were there for, like, a day, and then had the pro tour. So we didn't really have too much time to, like, you know, explore the city or whatever. But, yeah, I don't know, it's just, like, going out to, you know, a restaurant or whatever, and just, like, again, just not being able to communicate at all, just, like, have to, like, point to stuff, or, like, you know, can't even, like, say, you know, we want to eat, we have two people, you know, like, can't, like, I should have looked up, you know, of some basic Japanese, but, like, I didn't even know, like, numbers or anything, you know, I didn't, like, even just ask, like, where the bathroom is, or anything, there's just no communication. It was really weird. So, but it was pretty sweet. Like I said, it was definitely an experience I'm grateful for, because, you know, just being in another country, like, I don't know how to describe it. Like I said, it was surreal almost, you know. It's just really weird.
But. And were you worried about not having a team?
Not really at the time, no. This was before there was, like, big teams. Like, I'm not sure if it was before Channel Fireball was a website. I don't think so. I think Channel Fireball was a website, but, like, Star City didn't have, a team Star City Games. So it was before there really was big teams, and this was actually, if you remember the set that it was new. It was New Phyrexia. It was the new set, and there was the whole thing where it got leaked early with
the French website.
Yeah. So it was actually out like 3 months or like 3 weeks or four, almost a month before the Pro Tour. So like I had a lot of time to look at it, and luckily for me, because I was, you know, didn't have a team, I was just by myself playing on Moto, the format was pretty simple. It was just like Tempered Steel was just really good, and, you know, everything else was kind of okay. So I just played a lot of Tempered Steel on Moto, and I think I had a very good deck for that tournament. I actually went 4-1 and constructed, but then I 0-3'd the draft to miss day two. So it was because back then you had to 5-3 to day two. So starting 4-1 was also a pretty sweet feeling, you know, finally get to the Pro Tour and then I'm actually winning. is, you know, something else. But then it was pretty. I was pretty disheartened to not day two after such a good start. But you know, I knew that I was always, you know, I knew how limited wasn't my strong point. I'd done a lot of drafts with friends at home to try to get ready, but I still knew that I was probably going to struggle. So unfortunately, I struggled a little more than I was hoping. But yeah, it was still awesome. I still loved, you know, loved obviously being there, but it was definitely disappointing.
And then so you come home from your first Pro Tour, and how did you feel? Like, were you motivated
I met a lot of people that I didn't know before, and I was friends with some of the other guys. Again, like I knew Matthias and from Minnesota, and like I talked to him and kind of hung out with the guys he was with, and then just like met a bunch of other group of guys that were just there, and that like seemed like they were at, you know, went to most of the Pro Tours, and just like hung out with them, and it was, you know, really awesome. They were really, really cool people, and like I, you know, I've said many times, you know, the main reason I play Magic nowadays is just because the community is so good. You know, I love hanging out with friends. Like, I love the game too, of course.
Uh-huh.
But you know, I love just hanging, meeting all these people, and getting to see these friends, you know, that I never see if I didn't play Magic. So you know, just I wanted to get back to that. I wanted to, you know, be able to like be a regular with these group of guys that, you know, went to all these Pro Tours. You know, I really wanted to get back on the Pro Tour for sure.
Okay,
I was really, really motivated to get back.
Story time. What is your favorite moment from Pro Tour Nagoya?
From Pro Tour Nagoya.
Or do you have a funny story about getting lost in Japan or?
No, I, like I said, it was just me and another guy, and we were just at a hotel next to the site. You know, it wasn't too bad, but I don't know. My favorite moment was probably just after I had 4-1 constructed. You know, I was really on a high of just, you know, doing, like I said, starting 4-1 at my first Pro Tour was pretty insane. I was pretty happy. You know, I had a couple friends who, like, I had, like, two friends who just, like, never won, you know, their first, like, two or three Pro Tours, they never won a match. So I was, like, really, you know, kind of not scared, but, you know, really nervous going in, thinking, you know, maybe this is, you know, like, it's just going to be really hard, and I'm just going to get outplayed left and right. But, like, I was definitely not great back then. I'm sure I got outplayed a lot, but it wasn't nearly as, like, bad as I thought it was going to be. You know, just, like, it was really just, like, you know, a little bit harder than like the PTQs that I played in.
Uh-huh.
So, but, so yeah, so like I said, after going from, you know, at the beginning of the day, I was just like, you know, super, super anxious and just really nervous, you know, thinking that I was just probably just like, you know, maybe I just wasn't good enough to be here or whatever, to being 4-1 and, you know, being really excited.
And then so, were you back to that feeling? I mean, did you know that the wheels were falling off? Like, during the draft, or?
Yeah, my draft was kind of a train wreck. I started and then I got like a late signal in pack two that I moved in on, and then it ended up like kind of working out for a couple picks, but then really dried up. So I had like half of one deck and half of another. So I knew my deck was awful, and I knew it was going to be hard to win. But I, so you know, I thought my deck could probably win at least a round. You know, like I said, especially after being 4-1 and feeling so good, I was like really disappointed, but I was still happy to, you know, to like experience that, because then I realized that, you know, it's maybe I was, you know, going to be able to play well at this level, you know, in the future. You know, it wasn't as unreachable as I thought.
Okay. Yes. And then you go on a heater.
Yeah, yeah, these past...
that you're still on.
4 months now, yeah, it's actually just been insane. I you know, just can't believe I'm still running so good, but, like, let's see, like...
What was your success like after the Pro Tour, after that first Pro Tour?
After that Pro Tour, I'd just done okay again. I won a regional, or didn't win, but, like, back at the time, they had regionals where...
I miss regionals
four.
A lot.
Yeah, regionals used to be really sweet. I think it was top four. This one might have been top eight. I don't remember. But you just like played, you know, played the Swiss and then played like the first round of top eight, and then the whole top four qualified for nationals. So you didn't need to, you know, play it out. So I like won the tournament or whatever, but I don't think I actually won the tournament. But I qualified. I don't remember if I, you know, just top four or whatever. But so I got to go to nationals, and the first time ever playing in nationals. That was kind of sweet too. Just you know, nationals was a more you know, low key tournament compared to the Pro Tour, but it was still, you know, still nationals. So
yeah,
that was awesome. But I actually didn't win a match in nationals. That was kind of unfortunate. I had a deck that I thought was really sweet, but I didn't play the mirror match at all. It was the red blue Splinter Twin deck in standard.
Okay,
Clawblade had just gotten banned. It was still like a deck, but I don't think it was as good. Although I still did really well in that tournament. Still a really good deck, but you know, Jason Stoneforge had just gotten banned. So I had this really sweet blue-red Splintertwin deck that I really liked the Callaway matchup. And another friend of mine had qualified, so we tested a bunch, but we never actually tested the mirror match. And then I played three mirror matches and just got crushed, because the mirror match is actually really complicated and intricate, and like you really have to know what's going on. It basically, whoever like tries to combo first is probably going to lose, because you can just like, your deck was full of dispels and stuff, and like negates maybe, I don't remember exactly, but I know it had a bunch of dispels in it, so like, yeah, like dispels and negates, so like, if you tried to combo, they could eventually just, after you like burn through all your counter magic, they could just play their own Deceiver and tap your guy in response to your Splinter Twin. So then your guy would be tapped and Splinter Twin would come into play, but you just fought this counter war, so then they just untap and Splinter Twin their guy. So it's like really something that you needed to like figure out before the tournament. So
okay,
I just got crushed in three straight mirrors, like completely outplayed. But I wasn't too upset. You know, I wasn't like super invested in this tournament. You know, it was at Gen Con. So I was like, okay, happy to be at Gen Con. So there's plenty of other things to do at Gen Con.
Yeah. It's like if you lose at Gen Con, you're still at Gen Con.
Exactly. So, you know, I'd probably rather 0-3 than like, you know, top 32 or something.
Yeah.
Top 8 maybe. Obviously rather top 8, but, you know, being at Gen Con, there's like some plenty of other stuff to do. So, but, that was my first like tournament back from the Pro Tour was that regional. So I was still feeling pretty good, and then I didn't really have too much success until I qualified for Pro Tour Barcelona. I won a Moto PTQ with Malirapod, actually.
Okay.
And that was, like I said, Extended had always been my favorite format, whether it be like old Extended where it was really big or like the smaller Extended. I really like playing Extended, so then when they announced Modern, I was really excited. You know, still to this day, Modern's my favorite format, and I knew I was really going to like the format when they announced it, so I, you know, got really excited with, and a couple friends of mine were the same way. They really like Extended or Modern now. And so we, like, did a bunch of work when it first came out, and we had, like, this really sweet blue-white deck that we played. It was just, like, Callblade, basically. I top 8 in the very first Modern PTQ that I played in, and then lost in the quarterfinals of that. But then there was a Modern Grand Prix, and so we had this Callblade deck we were playing, and I really liked it. And, like, I'd always played, like, these blue decks in the past. I never really played too much other than that. You know, my range wasn't too wide back then. So I was, like, intent on this Callaway deck, but there'd been this like pod deck that I heard of that, like, I don't know if you know John Pennick.
Yeah.
He was playing it. He had been playing it a bunch on Moto, and it looked really good. So I played a little bit on Moto just to like try it out, and it was okay. I liked it. You know, I did okay with it on Moto, but you know, I played it a bunch. I had some experience with it. And then the night before Grand Prix Lincoln, I like had lost in a grinder for a Grand Prix trial with Malirapod. With Callblade, and I was like, well, you know, I'm still to this day, I'm pretty bad about like choosing a deck and sticking to it. Lately, for Modern, I've been pretty, you know, luckily I've been on Malirapod forever, but like I always get the pre-tournament, you know, like the day before the tournament, I'm always like, well, maybe I should be playing this. But so I like switched. I'm like, well, I'll play this pod deck in a grinder, and if I do well in the grinder, then I'll just play pod tomorrow. And so I played a grinder, and actually I lost in the finals to a friend of mine. So, and then, you know, the next day I decided to play pod, and I've been playing it ever since, so.
And but, how did you do it, Lincoln?
I top 32'd.
Okay.
I actually drew in the last round. I think you know Lewis, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I drew with Lewis in the last round to we both top 32'd. So,
and it was both, okay.
For both of us, it was our best GP at the time, so we were both pretty happy. So, and he was playing the Callaway deck that we had been working on, and so.
Cool. Yeah, that was my first Grand Prix. I did.
Oh,
I went 3-3 drop. I played Blackburn.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So
that wasn't too bad.
Yeah, I was still like really new. I had quit for 3 years.
Okay.
And then kind of like played off and on for the next year.
Okay.
So when the GP rolled around, it was still like I was still relatively fresh.
Okay.
So like my fundamental, I would do much better, like, in Lincoln, or in Vegas, and in Kansas City.
Okay, yeah.
I went 6-3.
Oh, nice, that's not bad.
So, on day one, but in Vegas, I was so disappointed, I missed day two by round 9, game 3.
Oh, geez, that's pretty rough.
To a Thysis.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
It's like, take 10, or whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
That card can be pretty brutal.
Yeah, and I had tested for that Grand Prix, too. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
It just motivated me to keep on going. So
yeah, definitely. So yeah, so you, Grand, Grand Prix Lincoln. So yeah, so Lincoln went well, and then I was still playing Pod. I top aided another PTQ later in the season with Pod and lost in the semifinals to a friend of mine. And then we went to Grand Prix Indy. I don't know if you remember that one. It was Legacy. Tom Martell ended up winning with Stoneblade or something like that. But okay. So we play the tournament, and I'm playing the Stoneforge deck. I don't remember exactly what it was. I think blue-white, maybe blue-white, black. I don't remember. I think it was just blue-white. But anyway, I played the Stoneforge deck, and I ended up like going 6-2-1, losing the last round to not day two. And none of my card day two'd.
And we didn't really know if we wanted to come for the next day. We were debating. Like, we went to dinner and we were talking about maybe we'll just drive home instead. So we decided that, and there was a Moto PTQ Sunday morning. So I was like, well, if we drive home now, I can sleep in the car and then get home and play the Moto PTQ. So, you know, I kinda wanna do that. So we decided, yeah, we'll just go home. So we ended up driving home, and then I ended up winning that Moto PTQ. So I'm really happy that I didn't win that last round of Indianapolis. So, and I won that PTQ with Malira Pod. So another good tournament for me with Pod.
Yeah.
So that qualified me for Pro Tour Barcelona. And that's the first time that I messaged Matthias, and because I knew that he was getting a group of guys together to test for this Pro Tour. And I played with him a bit at PTQs. And so I messaged him, and I was just like, you know, I qualify. I just want to Moto PTQ, and I'm hoping to. I don't really know anybody else qualified, so I was wondering if I could work with you guys. And they had room for another person, and I worked with a pretty good group of guys. It was like a bunch of the Californian guys, like Shahar, Ricky, Sidher, Michael Hetrick, Andres Prost from Alaska, a few of the other more Minnesotan guys. So like a pretty cool group of guys. So I worked with them and. Worked with them for a couple of pro tours, and then luckily Matthias got to working with these Canadian guys. So, you know, it all kind of led to where I am now.
All right. And then, so kind of give me like a summary of your career post Lincoln. So Lincoln top 32, and then you.
Yeah. So I top 32 Lincoln. Then I won a PTQ with a modern PTQ with Pod. Then I min cashed that pro. I actually split in the last round to min cash that pro tour. So that was my first time actually getting money from a pro tour.
Okay.
And then after that I came back and won the very last PTQ of the season with Delver in standard for the next pro tour, which was Seattle.
Okay.
So I qualified for Seattle and I worked with the same group of people. Didn't do too well in Seattle. And then. Let's see. Then I didn't qualify for Montreal. That the PTQ format was sealed, and like I said, I don't really play too much sealed, so I didn't qualify for that. I actually played a bunch of PTQs in that sealed format to try to qualify, just because I really wanted to, you know, I'd been working with this group, and I knew they were going to work together again for Montreal. So I tried, but didn't qualify that season. And then it was the next season was Modern, so I was like really excited because I, you know, had a bunch of success in Modern. The very first PTQ I played in was New Year's Day, and it was on Moto, and that's when I lost in the finals with Pod. I was actually playing Naya Pod at the time, and then I lost in the, like, 2 weeks later, top eighted again on Moto, lost in the quarterfinals. So at this point, I was still feeling, like, really good, because they'd been doing these sponsorship exemptions. I already knew that if I got really close again, I'd probably get an invite, and it was, like I said, it was Modern, and I knew I really liked that format and had done pretty well in it. So I was like pretty sure I was going to qualify, but then I ended up having a string of like near misses for top eights or just like maybe some O2 drops that I don't remember. But so didn't do too well. Then the very last PTQ of the season, again, I switched back to Malira Pod and then lost in the finals of that one. So and then that got me a sponsorship invite, and then I didn't do too well at that pro tour. I ended up playing Scape Shift. I don't know why I didn't. The Pro Tour was Modern. I don't know why I didn't play Pod.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so I played Scape Shift. Or, no, this was San Diego. Never mind. Sorry. The Modern Pro Tour was the Pro Tour before this, Seattle, that I didn't play Pod. I played Scape Shift in Seattle.
Okay.
Didn't do well. But so this Pro Tour was actually block constructed. And we ended up playing a Maze's End Fog deck that didn't go too well, as you can imagine. So it was Dragon's Maze, or Return to Ravnica block constructed. So I didn't think our deck was too bad, but it was a lot of fun. And I actually won a Mazes and Mirror in the Pro Tour after mulliganing to one. So that was pretty sweet. At least I got a cool story out of it. So, but yeah, so then that was San Diego. And then Then I qualified for Dublin. Oh yeah, so then that's when. So I still like at this point, you know, I qualified for a bunch of pro tours, but I never really had too much success. You know, I didn't really have any like big GP finishes. I never really, you know, had like big caches or anything. So then I decided to fly over the summer. There was like two or three Grand Prix that I really wanted to go to, and I never like actually flown to a Grand Prix before. So I decided to fly out to a couple of GPs, and Miami was the first individual GP that I
brought
flew
you
to
Miami.
Yeah, so I flew to Miami. You know, I figured I'd be in Miami, so even if I don't do well, I just like, you know, kind of take a vacation in Miami. It'd be still a pretty great place to be. And then I never even like really played much standard at the time. I just like had picked up this this Junk Rights deck. I'd read a couple articles about it. It seemed kind of sweet. A friend of mine had top eight at a PTQ with it. So, you know, like the week before, a couple weeks before, so I just figured I'd give it a shot. And ended up getting second place in that tournament, which qualified me for Dublin, and then a couple months later was Detroit, and you know, it was Modern, so I was really excited about it. I played Malirpod and ended up winning that one, and then won this TCG thing with Malirpod. So I've just been on this sick, you know, crazy heater. I've just been running so good lately.
Yeah, but, one thing that was amazing to me when you won that TCG player tournament was just how easy you made it look.
Oh yeah, I did exceptionally well on that one. Just like even throughout the, like I don't think I lost to Sam Party,
who another Modern
in a pod, in a pod mirror too. So I lost to him in a pod mirror, but other than that, I didn't lose a single match the whole tournament. So
now it's today. You're coming off the GP Miami second place finish, Detroit win, TCG player 50K win. How much of this do you attribute to natural talent, and how much of this do you attribute to practice?
It's definitely a lot of practice. I think one of the reasons, you know, that I hadn't really done too well in the past, and I've been doing really well recently, is because I've been playing with these Canadian guys. You know, these, you know, they're all like very good players and way better than me. And I think that like playing with them really, really improved my game a lot. Since joining this team, I think I've grown a lot as a player, and I think I've gotten a lot better, and I think that's really attributed a lot to my success recently. So just really practicing and figuring out where I need to improve and, you know, what I can do better has really helped a lot. So because if it was all natural talent, I maybe a little bit, but you know, I'd like to think that I would have been doing really well in the past too. But you know, I was always doing like kind of okay to mediocre, and then as soon as I started playing with these, you know, these Canadian guys, you know, and not all Canadians, it's the whole team. You know, I've just gotten a lot better recently, I think, and most of that is because of them. So I'm really, really grateful to be on this team, and I really am happy about that.
And how did you do in Dublin? I don't think you mentioned
that. I ended up making day two, but I think I died in like round 14 or something.
Oh, okay.
I ended up going 8-8 total. So okay, not great. It was actually funny because I 4-2 limited, which is really, you know, not my strong suit. So I was like, after 2-1-ing my first draft, I was pretty excited. But we played Esper, and the Esper list that we played had a lot of removal, like a lot of Doomblades and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And not like we didn't have any Aetherlings or counterspells in the main deck, and we only had like one or two counterspells in the sideboard. So like our mirror match was okay. We still had Thought Seizes, which were good, but I felt like our mirror match was a little rough, and I ended up playing against like seven other blue decks in the tournament, so it was a little unfortunate. I played against like one or two green decks, which were supposed to be really good against, and then a bunch of blue decks. So
gotcha. And how are you improving your limited game?
Like I said, just drafting with these guys, I think, has made me a lot better.
Okay,
I'm focusing more on like the playing of the games. Like drafting is obviously important too, but I think that like in constructed, I can, you know, I probably played, you know, hundreds of matches with Malirpod, so any situation that comes up, I've probably been there before, you know, 10 times or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I like just kind of know like what's going to happen if I make this play, what's going to happen if I make this play, and you know how this line is going to turn out. So I know by experience how that's all going to work out. Where in limited, you really have to think about your lines of play, like, and the outcomes are a lot. You have to like kind of figure them out on the spot, you know.
Yeah,
I haven't been in this, you know, I haven't played my blue-white aggressive draft deck against this blue-green tempo draft deck, you know, 100 times like I have the pod Jun match, you know.
Yeah.
So I definitely think being able to just like like actually like technically play really good Magic is really important and limited. So I've been working on that a lot lately.
Gotcha. So what's your life been like outside of Magic? I mean, it's been a wild ride so far. How is your life outside of Magic like kind of delightfully mundane or?
Yeah, it's not too exciting, but I go to school. I said I'm actually taking some classes at Kirkwood Community College right now, but I plan to go to take classes. Like I said, I'm thinking about switching my major back to physics here next semester and go back to Iowa. So, you know, that the community classes or community college courses aren't too, you know, challenging or exciting. So, you know, just kind of doing that and, you know, so then just like getting ready for the next tournament. So I play a lot of poker too. So I do that.
Okay.
Pretty much, you know, 4 out of the 5 days of the week, there'll be a game somewhere to go to. So that's kind of exciting. But
and are you doing the typical college party dating thing or?
No, not really. you know, I don't know. I've never really been into like parties and stuff. You know, I've always been kind of on the shy and introverted side. So I generally avoid that type of thing.
And now that you're a Googleable Magic figure, how does that affect you in terms of like talking to a girl that you like or meeting people for the first time? I mean, do you hide this sort of like this other thing or?
No, I definitely don't hide it. You know, if somebody asks me about it, like I actually once in a while I'll get a question because I wear, you know, I have this Mana Deprived hoodie and it's actually a really nice hoodie, you know, just as like if it didn't say anything on it, I'd still wear it.
Yeah.
You know, so I actually wear that when it gets cold. So like I'll have once in a while somebody ask me, like a new friend that I started talking to recently or guys that I hang out with that don't play Magic, you know, that I never really talked about that. They'll ask me, you know, oh, what's Mana Deprived? So then I kind of get talking about it. And, you know, like I said, I don't hide it, but, you know, I don't just go out and say like, hey, I'm Josh, I play Magic, which, you know, it depends, you know, the circumstances of where, if I'm meeting somebody at, you know, like, you know, playing video games, then I might, you know, say, bring it up because it's, you know, something that's kind of relatable, but like, you know, if it's completely off topic, I won't hide it, but I won't necessarily bring it up, I guess.
Yeah. And is that the same, do you have the same philosophy when you talk to, you know, some girl you like? Or
it'd be the same thing. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, has it been the same thing?
Yeah. I mean, I'm single right now, and I have been for a while, so it hasn't really come up in a while. But if it did, I'd imagine it would be yes.
Gotcha. So, and Josh, do you what would you recommend to players who want to get better? You're still. I mean, you're on a heater, but you're still not on the train.
No, I'm not on the train. I still need like 7 or 10 more pro points to be gold. But even if I like do well at another Grand Prix and like, you know, maybe top 50 approach or whatever, get some pro points to lock up gold, I still, you know, I've never really had that much. I've never really had success on the pro tour yet. I'm still looking. I'm still trying to get that. So I still, you know, need to improve a bunch myself. But, you know, for people just trying to improve in general, I really think playing with really good players is very important. You know, there's only so much you can do by just like reading things on the internet and playing, you know, games with your friends or whatever. You certainly can get better, you know, trying to figure out like why you know, you lost this game, why you made this play that you did, you know, definitely asking why a lot, I think another good thing, like, you know, always have a reason for your plays or whatever, but you know, that's stuff you hear all the time. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, I think just playing with other good players and like seeing the things they do and just like, it really like gets you thinking about the game a lot differently, you know, just in ways that you'd like take lines that like you never really thought of or whatever. Like you see them do that and you're like, oh yeah, that makes sense, you know, and stuff like that.
Yeah. Do you produce any content?
I write articles every once in a while. Like whenever I do well at a tournament, I'll usually write an article. You know, I wrote a report for DC, and then recently I wrote an article for TCG Player about the Mono Blue deck that I played.
Okay.
But I don't have a regular like spot or anything. Once in a while I'll stream, not too often, maybe like once every couple months or whatever. But
okay. And then if somebody wanted to follow you on Modo, what is your Modo name?
On Modo, I'm good_game.
Okay.
I used to play a lot of Moto. I still play a decent amount, so I'm on there every now and then. Hopefully, these daily events will come back so I can start playing a lot more. But that whole thing's kind of a disaster right now. Yeah, so.
I mean, as
it's
a Moto,
A-mans are still fine, but
and as a Moto peep, somebody who's qualified with Moto and who's fairly invested in the success of Moto, like, what is your opinion of the whole situation? And for my listeners that don't know, the Mox, the big premier Magic Online tournament, crashed. The next day, the PTQ Online crashed. And then the next day, they took Moto down pretty much almost completely. And then they slowly restored some of it. But they're supposedly fixing things and stuff like that. So what's your opinion of the whole situation?
I think that it's a long time coming, I guess. Like there's been some problems going on now for, you know, a couple years. It's, you know, it's kind of, I don't know, not really disappointing, but just kind of like a little disappointing that, you know, it really took like this happening to like Brian Gibbler for them to finally do something about it. Like, you know, this problem's been happening for, like I said, like 2 or 3 years, and now they're suddenly, oh, it's really bad, we need to fix it. Whereas before, they've been like, yeah, we're working on it, we'll get it done, don't worry. And once that happens to a really prominent figure who's very vocal about it, then suddenly they're like, oh, yeah, we're sorry, we really need to fix it or whatever. But I am very happy they're fixing it. You know, it sucks not to be able to play dailies for like 3 months or 4 months or however long it's going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in the long run, it's definitely a good thing, you know.
Has it inspired you to play more Paper Magic?
Not necessarily, no. I still, you know, I never, like, dailies were like, really good value or whatever, just to, like, if you just wanted to play Magic. But 8-man cubes are still fine for getting ready for events. You know, 8-mans or dailies, they're not too different for, as far as, like, preparing for a Grand Prix go.
Okay.
So I can still really prepare as much as I want to on Moto, as I did before, so.
Okay.
But I definitely, like I said, if you were playing Moto to, like, you know, you hear these people, there's all these stories of people who used to, like, play for a living, which it obviously must work in other countries.
Yeah.
You know, it really sucks for those guys, and I really, you know, really, like, I feel for them, but, you know, it's never something that I never really, like, played Moto, you know, to make money. You know, I always played, I only played Moto to improve and to practice for, you know, Grand Prix, to figure out a format or whatever. So it's not that much worse for me than it was before.
Yeah. Okay, cool, Josh. Well, thank you very much. And if they wanted to hit you up on Twitter, where could they find you?
Yeah, you can follow me at good_game_.
Okay.
Unfortunately, there was already a good_game, so add another underscore to that. But I try to, you know, tweet every now and then, just tournaments or that I'm going to or whatever. So.
And I have to say, Josh, my kudos to you for being one of the nicest. nicest Magic grinders I've ever met.
Oh, thank you.
And you're just sure. Like, I follow you on Twitter, and I love how, like, just dedicated to playing the game you are. Like, you talk about improving, and you talk about, you tweet really cool, really interesting questions, I think. And I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, well, thank you. So I appreciate, you know, the opportunity to be on this podcast. It's a lot more than I thought I was just gonna, like, maybe talk about Standard or something, but it was actually really sweet, you know. I never really sat down and talked through all the, you know, things I've done in Magic. So
yeah, and I'm sure there will be more.
Yeah, hopefully. I'm looking forward to I really like the Standard format, and I think this Mono Blue deck's really good, so I'm really looking forward to Albuquerque this weekend.
Cool.
So I fly out tomorrow or Friday, so.
Yeah, New Mexico.
Yep. So that should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Anyway, well, thank you very much for your time, and good luck in Albuquerque.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks again for having me on here.
Bye. Welcome back, everybody. Once again, I am Matt Mendoza, and this has been the 30th episode of Across the Table and my interview with grinder Josh McLean. Isn't he just the coolest dude? Anyway, thank you for listening. As always, you can send any feedback to me on Twitter at Matt Mendoza, or to me via email at acrossthetablepod@gmail.com. As well, if you want to follow the cast and keep up with any news, updates, guests, etc., You can find us on Twitter at Across the Cast, us, me. As well, you can find the cast on Facebook at Across the Table Podcast, on iTunes at Across the Table, and on manadeprived.com, as well as my site, kccompetition.com. So there's like a bunch of ways to find me. Anyway, I hope you have a great night and enjoy your weekend.